Since the dawn of the recycling system, we have stood by our bins holding an everyday object wondering, honey, can I recycle this? The simple question reaches into our concern for the environment, the care we take to keep our homes and our communities clean, and how we interact with our local government. Well, Jenny Romer's new book, Can I Recycle This?, gives straightforward answers to whether dozens of common household objects can or cannot be recycled, as well as the information you need to make that decision for anything else you encounter. Jenny has been working for years to help cities and states across America better deal with the waste we produce, helping draft legislation to help communities better process their waste and produce less of it in the first place. Again, the name of the book is Can I Recycle This? A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastics. That is the third subtitle and a very, very good one, which we'll discuss this morning. Jenny Romer, thank you very much for being with us. What a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
The book is very cool. You, the way it is set up, the way it is illustrated, and it's very easy. It's very fun, and you do it in such a beautiful way. How did the idea come about of making this guide for us to help us figure out what we're supposed to do with all of our stuff?
Yeah. So I thought about writing a book for quite a while about recycling because I've been, you know, working on single-use plastic reduction for almost 15 years now, and I've learned so much along the way about recycling, mostly because the plastics industry says everything is recyclable, and I had to do a lot of research into what really was and what wasn't. And I thought that I wanted to have something that was really approachable, to not just have a regular book. So I thought of having an illustrated book and got paired up with a really great illustrator, Christy Young, to try to explain how I think about recycling and reducing single-use plastic, and being able to really walk the reader through everything. So walking through what happens when you put something in your bin, what happens when it gets to the recycling facility and how it's sorted, and then going through, you know, not just saying yes or no to whether things are recycled, but trying to have the reader really look at, you know, how a can of cocktail peanuts, what would happen to that when it gets to a facility? How would it be sorted? Would there be a market for it? Yeah. So I thought it was really a different way to look at recycling than anything else that I had seen.
So I'm going to make a statement, and then you tell me whether you agree with that statement or not, which is that most of us want to do the right thing and want to recycle. And why a guide like this is necessary is because it can be very confusing to figure out what the system is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that a lot of people, it's not by accident. The plastics industry has spent a lot of money, millions of dollars over decades, to have us all believe that recycling is the answer to everything, that we don't need to reduce. All we need to do is recycle and everything will work out. But that's not really the case. You know, recycling is a commodities market, and what you put in your bin has to be able to be sorted and then sold to someone who wants to buy it and turn it into another item. So, you know, there's that happening, that we've been told that recycling is great, and it's kind of this do-gooder activity. And so people really want to recycle. It makes them feel good to put something in the recycling bin rather than the garbage bin.
Right.
Kind of defeatist putting it in the garbage bin. But unfortunately, all of that, what we call wish cycling, really ends up not being good for the recycling system or the environment.
I can't prove this, Jenny. I have no photographic evidence. It's just purely 100% anecdotal. But I have a garbage can, and then I have a can with a yellow top on it that says single stream recycling. I swear to God, when the truck comes in, they both go in the same place. Again, can't prove it. But am I right to be skeptical?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people either really have a lot of faith that whatever they're putting in the recycling bin is being recycled, or other people are concerned that nothing is happening with recycling. So I really want to make that whole process more transparent, and I want people to pay more attention and really care about where their garbage goes. It's one thing where most people, you know, it's garbage, it's waste. And, you know, a lot of people are just kind of trained to not think about what happens next at all. So I think having more of that curiosity of, okay, what happens when I put it in my bin? What happens in the truck? You know, I love going to a recycling facility and seeing, you know, what your local facility does as far as like what kind of machinery do they have? Do they have optical sorters? Do they use like magnets and electrical currents to sort things? Or is it just, you know, people that are sorting at your facility? So I think, you know, I encourage people, because I'm excited about recycling, to see how it works, to encourage other people to, you know, look online at how these facilities work, to take a tour of your local facility, if that's allowable where you live, and to get a sense of what happens next. And I think that really can help you figure out what you should be putting in the bin.
Right.
In addition to buying and reading my book. And also, I think beyond that, helping legislators with writing effective policies, because we really need to see policies that are based on what's happening on the ground at recycling facilities, rather than the lobbying that we're seeing by the plastics industry. For example, you know, in New York City, the plastics industry, specifically Dart Container, that makes what we call styrofoam cups, foam cups, they spent a whole lot of money lobbying to try to have those foam cups and other foodware be considered recyclable in New York City, even though there isn't a value. No one wants to buy that material on the commodities market. So there's a lot going on as far as what is allowed in bins and what isn't. So I try to really look beyond what certain jurisdictions allow you to put in the bin or want you to put in the bin, to kind of what the whole commodities market looks like.
Jenny Romer is our guest. Her new book is Can I Recycle This? A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce Single-Use Plastics. One of the things that you just mentioned about the New York City situation brings to mind a question that I had in reading the book. We are a radio station and a show that goes to 7 states. How much of this is geographic, in the sense of my recycling system may be different, or it probably is different than your recycling system, and that then depends on us to figure out what it is so that we can make the best use of what we have available to us?
Yeah, so it really, there is some variation, but a lot of it is kind of depending on what your local jurisdiction has, what kind of recycling philosophy they've adopted. So, for example, New York City accepts all rigid plastics curbside, and their philosophy is that they found that if they accept everything, then they'll get a whole lot more, and they'll be able to sort out the good stuff, and they'll have more of that good stuff to sell. And that good stuff is number one and number two bottles and jugs. So that tends to be water bottles, milk jugs, maybe some shampoo containers. And that really has a value on the market. Other places, what maybe would only take, they'll say, only give me the good stuff. So only give me the number one and number two bottles and jugs. And so my book gets into, you know, what the really high value plastic is versus the low value. And if you're using and recycling high value plastic, that's very likely to get made into something else. Whereas something like a party cup, like those red cups that people buy for parties, those are made of number 6 polystyrene. That's actually the same resin as the foam cups, but it's just a rigid form. And that has no market in the U.S. No one wants to buy it and turn it into something else. So really a big take home is whether those things are going to be actually recycled into another item, and to really try to avoid the low value plastics that won't get turned into another item. And so there might be some variation as far as what's accepted, but what's ultimately turned into a new product really doesn't change very much regionally.
So, well said. So that makes sense to me. So if I'm a college kid who has a red Solo cup, because that's where you tend to see them all the time. So you see them, and but that's on then on us to make the decision of, oh, well, maybe that's not the kind of cup I will buy for said party.
Yeah, or even, you know, reusing after the beer pong, reusing, like washing and reusing those cups is fine. Or if you're hosting a party, trying to use, you know, whatever cup, regular cups you have on hand. I think those are the personal choices you can make.
Yeah.
Just small examples, but also, you know, I talk about policy as well. So having the producers of those plastics, producers of those of that packaging, be responsible for the financial costs of recycling and waste disposal. And so I think if we see that shift, then we see products that are really more recyclable, because right now they're not getting recycled into something else. But if the producers are held responsible for making that happen, I think we'd see a very different system.
You bring up a great point when you talk about reuse, too. And I say this because I recently helped a nephew clean up after a college party. And just, you know, for the record, I don't think anybody should ever drink out of those cups again because it's gross. But aside from that, one of the things that I found really interesting in the debate here in New York State over grocery bags was that people would say, well, look, we don't need to buy the store grocery bags and banning those bags because we can just use those and reuse those bags as opposed. And that was, I guess, the plastic bag manufacturers were saying that, too, that you are in a way recycling them because you're using them over and over again. And yes, maybe I'm using it for my groceries today and tomorrow I'll use it as a dog poop bag. But that still doesn't solve the problem, does it?
No, and my background is with plastic bags. I've been working on plastic bag laws for 15 years, and I moved to New York from San Francisco with the dream of passing a plastic bag law in New York City Council. And that happened. It was overturned by the state, and now we have a statewide law in its place. So that's a whole other subject.
But so I've go you.
Very intimate.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of dealings with the plastic bag industry. They have a front group called the American Progressive Recyclable Bag Alliance or something like that. A very nice sounding name that really fights plastic bag laws in all kinds of small jurisdictions, large jurisdictions, everywhere. And yeah, that's one of their responses is that those plastic bags will be reused. But we've seen that most people will just use plastic bags for maybe, I think the average is 12 minutes and not reuse them, or have maybe a whole collection of bags that they plan to reuse someday under their sink or something like that.
Right.
But we've really seen that, you know, the plastic bag ban in New York has been effective. I do see people bringing their reusable bags to the store, which is what we really do want to see. But what I've been pushing for really is a fee component too, so that people are not just switching from one type of single-use bag to another. But in New York State, they're banning all plastic bags. So we've seen a huge increase in reusable bag use. But the plastics industry definitely has their talking points and will say that, you know, people need their bags for dog poop. But we've seen in a lot of jurisdictions that people are very adaptive. Where plastic bag carryout bags are banned, people can use other types of plastic bags, like bread bags, that would normally just be thrown away. So it's something that I keep an eye on effectiveness studies on plastic bag laws. So happy to talk about that more someday.
Well, I'm curious too. Is the idea of what we have in New York? If I go into a store, and let's say in the mall, not a food store, but I go in and I buy six or seven items, and they say, "Would you like a bag for 5 cents?" And usually, I've noticed that it's a paper bag or, you know, kind of a thing with handles on it or whatever. Is that good, or should we still just bring the bags with us? Because I will say this in my own life. I've been hardwired now to do it for the grocery store, but less so when I go in to, like, buy shoes.
Yeah, well, I think it's a lot more. It really depends. Makes you think a lot more about whether you need or want a bag. So maybe if there's a particular store that has a bag that you like or that you can see yourself reusing again, then maybe splurge on the 5 cents there, but not the 5 cents at the grocery store. And getting into the habit more of you know, now you're hardwired to bring your own bag to the grocery store, but you might not think about it as much when you go to buy shoes. But I think really, you know, I've been working on those laws for a very long time. And a big part of it is just having consumers be more mindful about their consumption. So for a long, long time, people did not think at all about getting a bag at a store. And so now, you know, people are bringing their own bag to the grocery store. They're being more mindful about other bags that they're getting, and maybe thinking, okay, what am I going to do if I get this? What's my plan next? And so that's a totally different mindset. And I think it also carries over to other single-use products. So, you know, buying water bottles or getting foam foodware, or whether someone needs a straw. I think that mindset starts with carryout bags is a gateway to other, you know, reusables as well.
I knew I was getting ready to do this interview today, and last night I did one of the things that I've been doing toward the pandemic. Ever since, actually, weirdly, and you shouldn't care about this, Jenny, but I'm just going to tell you anyway, that I started doing Lego after the Capitol riot. I don't know why, but it just became a thing to help calm me down. And since then, I've still needed calming down, so I just do a Lego set every night and work on Lego. How guilty should I feel about doing Lego?
My 10-year-old stepdaughter asks me that all the time. Is sometimes concerned that I will take away her Legos. But I think that's an example of a reusable item that has some value. And so I've done.
Oh, could you write a letter to my wife about the value part?
Because of her obsession with Legos. But I would say that those have some value in part because there are places that will take them and redistribute. So I found a place in Long Island in case you ever want to part with your Legos. But I think, you know, I think of recycling in the same way as whether there is a value, whether someone else is going to want to reuse that product. And because of my stepdaughter, I've done some Lego research.
Yeah, well, that's great. Really good stuff. I can't tell you how cool this book is. I have to say, I mean, this is a subject that I'm interested in, but the way you tackle it and how easy and accessible you make it, the illustrations are great. And I had a million questions going in and have to say everyone was answered. So good on you for doing this and for making it so simple.
Yeah, thank you. I was really lucky to work with Christy Young, the illustrator, and I think there's a little bit of humor in it as well.
Oh yeah,
you
make it fun.
It's a tough subject, and you know, when people hear, "Oh, I wrote a book about recycling," it doesn't seem very exciting. But I think we really made it like easy to read, fun, approachable, and you know, to reach an audience beyond the people that already care about recycling to reach that wider audience of people who will also dislike the illustrations, hopefully.
I'm going to give two web addresses. One is jennyromer.com, JennyRomer, jennyromer.com. You can find out more information there. And about the book, caniRecycleThisBook.com, caniRecycleThisBook.com. The name of the book is Can I Recycle This? A Guide to Better Recycling and How to Reduce... Take two, and how to reduce single-use plastics. It is published by Penguin. Jenny Romer, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much. You're a delight to speak to. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. Be well. Again, Can I Recycle This by Jenny Romer. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.